the tension is incredible. Boy, I'm in charge. You know how I feel for you. Will you stop or will you just keep going? Please don't say no, 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 no.
Thank you. you hesitate?
Go put your records on. Tell me your favorite song.
Sometimes when it's dark, and I'm your Betty Blue, and we're singing it close, like the girls in Belleville Rendezvous. I wish that we could somehow freeze the frame, but this isn't the silver screen. No, there's no pause, no rewind.
Time to find out where the story goes. Sat hip to hip with the curtains closed, watching ourselves, oh cinema. Take our positions as the cameras roll. You be the guy,
curtains closed, watching ourselves on cinema. Cinema. Take our positions as the cameras roll.
With the British is that their history happened elsewhere, which is why they're ignorant of it. I would argue that this is not just a British problem, but also holds for the German-speaking context, which have for a very long time distanced itself from post-colonial critique with the claim that neither Germany nor Austria nor Switzerland were major colonial powers. In the past few years, there's been increasing debate whether post-colonial scholarship that draws on the legacies of European enlightenment and concepts like human rights, transnational justice, and international law are reproducing Eurocentrism. Especially Latin American scholars categorically reject the enlightenment as harbinger of exploitation and destruction in the form of colonialism and capitalism, and critique the ideological erasures and hollow claims of the emancipatory nature of European enlightenment. They propose a return to uncontaminated, non-Eurocentric indigenous cosmologies and epistemologies. These critics view enlightenment legacies with suspicion as an alibi for former colonial powers to exercise domination while promising equality, freedom, and emancipation.
The West has been accused of being guilty of the same abuses of human rights that it condemns other states for perpetuating.
Schadenersatz für Asbestopfer oder die Diskriminierung von Frauen bei der IV-Berechnung. Es brauchte die Urteile des Europäischen Gerichtshofs für Menschenrechte, damit die Schweizer Politik die Probleme erkannt und angehen kann.
In contrast, advocates argue that as gifts of European enlightenment to the world, human rights, secularism, transnational justice, international law enable the globe's silent majority to find its voice. This is an excellent example of the normative dilemmas faced by postcolonial societies and postcolonial states vis-à-vis the legacies of European colonialism. On the one hand, human rights, transnational justice, international law, which are the embodiment of Enlightenment ideals, are repeatedly mobilized to justify intervention in non-Western contexts and in some ways violate the sovereignty of post-colonial states.
The West has been accused of being guilty of the same abuses of human rights that it condemns other states for perpetuating. In some quarters, human rights have come to be seen as a tool to justify a new imperialism by the West over darker peoples. Because the language of rights, which at one point carried some purchase and some potency, has become a byword for futility in the face of atrocity. This difficulty that we have of separating the law from the snooty view of the colonial project. So this multipolar world in which we live today has created many competing interests, which have pushed human rights down in the scale of the important interests for global powers. What is left is a language. If we sanctify the law, if we raise it above other societal phenomena, we cannot decolonize and deconstruct it.
Transnational justice and international law are like pharmacon, as Gayatri Spivak argued. They can be both poison, but also medicine. The challenge is how to transform poison into counter-poison.
It's the butterflies and the fireflies fighting in my stomach. Yeah,
life between them.
I'm scared to fly,
fly, fly, fly.
I might come down, think I'm ready now. I'm getting back in line.
I think it's the twist in the curve, or it is the up in the swerve. It is smiling so absolutely wide. It is the feeling of my nerves on the front edge of their seats. Eyes are open. Tears are coming from the thrill of sight, and I am moving as fast as the light, and I'm laughing for no damn reason, and I'm screaming for everything I am. I know I shouldn't have said in that last fight. Roller coasters, it's like meeting God with a kite in your left hand. Strings are still twisted around your forefinger and your right hand. Man, your right hand is still busy gripping the safety ring. There is this moment when you feel like you're in an ocean of your own butterflies. That's the moment I got free. I let my arms fly.
It's the butterflies, the fireflies, fighting in my stomach. I don't wanna come down. I think I'm ready now. I'm getting back in line. Think about the last time that I was really brave. I mean, really brave. I mean, not a
not afraid of nothing. I was 12 years old, and I asked myself why I was so excited to be so damn scared. Like feeling my very heart roam throughout my entire body, like a child lost at a theme park, only to find its place in my earthquake hands. But I could not wait to get back in line. I had to get on one more time. I couldn't wait, Jazz. I couldn't wait. Told my friends about how it feels from the very top. And that's when I knew that roller coasters were for people like me who have never been in love. I believe we all want to know how it feels to just fall.
Fly, 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 fly. Oh, 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 oh.
Fly with me.
Fly, 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 fly with me.
Fly,
fly, fly, fly.
This time I won't come down. I won't come down.